Hello and welcome to another episode of the PlanetIRL.com podcast. This week I'm joined by my regular co-host Paul Dalby, and we have a special guest host this week, direct from Australia, the international superstar himself, Shane Rogers, is with us. Good morning, Shane. How are you?
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good here. How are you, Paul?
Doing well, thanks. Good to hear from you again, Shane.
Good to hear from you for the first time, Shane. So we thought at first we're just going to do a little recap of Shane's trip here and get some answers from him for some questions we wanted to ask and just get a feel for what his trip here to America was like earlier this year. First off, what was the highlight of the trip for you for coming to America?
I think the highlight of the trip and undoubtedly the reason I sort of decided to come over was for the 500. So to enjoy the full 2 weeks I was over there for practice and then enjoy the race ceremonies, which, you know, have a different feeling when you watch them on television. They have the depth, but they to experience in person was just an amazing experience. So I think that was definitely the highlight. There were a few unexpected highlights because essentially it was a holiday planned around 6 motor races. Probably things like, you know, I'm not a big nature person, so the fact that I enjoyed something like Niagara Falls sort of surprised me. I enjoyed a lot of the touring. I did a lot of driving on the wrong side of the road. and I have since turned into roads in Australia on the wrong side at the odd chance, which has given the occasional person a fright, but we're getting there on that one. But stuff like that I enjoyed as well, and just meeting the locals, especially in parts of America where they don't see too many people from this part of the world. They were genuinely interested in seeing me, and I was genuinely interested in learning about them and the culture over there. So it was those sort of parts were very enjoyable as well.
And you were a little concerned about the volume of traffic on one of your first times.
I was absolutely freaked out because that's the first time I jumped in a car. I thought the good strategy was to land in Indy and spend the 2 weeks there and not rely on public transport in any form.
Shane, one of the funniest stories I heard the whole time you were here was your experiences trying to drive in Chicago. I think when you were going from Indianapolis to Milwaukee. And you got terrified the first time you had to drive on an interstate in one of the worst traffic places in the country and your first time on the wrong side of the road. Any other stuff like that?
Yeah, look, there was a few like that. Look, the good news is I managed not to kill anybody while I was over there. The worst one, I suppose, when I was over there, I was on I-465 going around Indy, and I think I turned onto 70th, somewhere in the range of sort of 70th Street, and I turned onto the wrong side of the road, and it was only, you know, it was literally a matter of, you know, if I sort of wasn't awake for another 0.3 of a second, I would have been on the wrong side of the road with a verge in between. I would have had to, like, fall driven over the verge in this little, you know, Korean-made, you know, not designed for doing that kind of thing vehicle. It would have been ugly, but you know it wasn't too bad. The Chicago traffic wasn't too bad. It was just getting used to the idea of a 6 or a 7 or an 8 lane road, because you know anywhere in Melbourne where I live now it's 5 lanes at the most, and all the exits are fairly well signed and fairly well in advance, and when you're not familiar with the territory and you're relying on a nav man that's, you know, been last pre-programmed when dinosaurs were still around and doesn't have all the exits, it's not very helpful. But we got there.
I do have to ask you, I hear a lot about the witch's hat. What is with the witch's hats?
The witch's hat. Okay, I think I may have rolled out some Australianisms over there without realising it, and one of them was the witch's hat, which is an Australianism for marker cone, essentially mm-hmm. traffic cone.
Yes.
I rolled this out the first time, and I think my American friend, and he'll remain nameless for the point of this conversation, but he knows who he is, basically replied with a WTF response, and I said, that, the orange thing on the ground, the witch's hat. He's gone, no, it's not, it's traffic cone. And I think from that point, I never lived it down. But you know, it's a witch's hat. I mean, if you're in gym class or what we call phys ed in Australia, physical education, and you're like 7 or 8 years old and it's on the ground, what are you going to do with it? You're going to pick it up and put it on your head. It's a witch's hat.
And it's still part of Twitter folklore today.
It is. But yeah, it wasn't the worst piece of Australian I've rocked out with over there, but I'm sure there's some others, and you just, yeah, some of them have become part of the culture. You know, I think the old crikey's now pretty popular, although that sort of, you know, hasn't been used here for about 20 years.
Well, Steve Irwin brought that one over here, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think we'll ever be allowed to use that one again without sounding too Australian. But, you know, you guys can pick most of it up.
Is there such a thing as too Australian, Shane? Come on.
Yeah, there is. Steve Irwin's too Australian.
Okay.
Well, I still think of Shane, though, every time I'm playing Mario Kart on my Wii and there's one of the tracks has some witch's hats all over it.
Yes, I didn't get the opportunity to meet Shane at any of the races this year, so I didn't get to experience all the Australianisms, so I had to ask him what the witch's hats were. Paul, did you have anything else you wanted to...
My thing is, Shane, did you ever, you know, when you started planning this trip back whenever, did you ever have an idea that, you know, the IndyCar community would, you know, take such a liking to you and really adopt you as one of our own over here? You know, most of us had maybe heard of you through, you know, Kevin and Kevin's radio program as the Australian guy that writes in every once in a while. But now maybe as much through My Name Is IRL and through all the other people that you got to meet while you were here, now you really truly are almost the international superstar of IndyCar fandom. Did it ever cross your mind that you'd turn out to be in this position?
Absolutely not. You know, I'm usually a reasonably low-key person, so I tend to, you know, go over to, you know, do what I do and keep under the radar and not sort of bring too much attention to myself. So, you know, to find myself sort of, you know, going to some of these places and being pointed out by people was a very scary thought. It was a great experience. I mean, I got to meet a lot of people, and I had a lot of people, you know, email me or Facebook message me before places I was going to and say, look, if you want to have a burger or get an understanding of the place, let us show you around. And that sort of stuff made the trip, you know, it made it so much easier to find things and get an understanding of the culture in the series and learn a lot more than I would have learned if I just went over there and sort of didn't catch up with anybody. So it was fantastic, and I'm doing my best to keep in touch with most of them on Twitter or keeping an eye on my email. So hopefully I get back over there in the near future and see you all again.
And about that, do you have any plans for a return trip anytime soon?
No plans in place at the moment. The plan in place at the moment is to get my credit card debt long enough to afford to go again. We're looking at 2012, I think. I was thinking about doing 2011 if the new car came along, but I think given their project timetable, I don't think they're going to hit that. Would have been nice to get over there for the 100th anniversary race, but I think there's more learning value for me in sort of in understanding these cars and this series if I come over when the new car hits. And I think if the new car is this new radical design that they're talking about, it may very much be worth the trip because it may be a learning experience for everybody that's there at the time.
Definitely come in 2012 because then I'll be able to hang with you back in the garages when I'm legal enough to do that.
Sounds good.
Yep. So moving on from your trip a little bit, what are your predictions for the championship weekend? Who's going to take the championship? And do you think, what are your thoughts on the championship race this season?
I've been genuinely surprised by how well Briscoe's gone, frankly, from a rookie point of view. I suppose when I saw Briscoe get hired by Penske full-time in the IndyCar program at the start of last year, my thought was always that it was going to be a three-year plan. Castro Neves looked pretty safe in his position and would probably be you know, in a position to be the main hope for them for the next 24 months, and then maybe at year three he'd be at the point where he'd be challenging for the title. I certainly saw him winning races this year, but I didn't see him being a title challenger this year. And then with the Helio thing, with the tax, that sort of all changed the landscape, and he was sort of foisted into a position where he didn't probably wasn't expecting to be, and the consequence of that is he's done very well, and I think in my view he's probably exceeded expectations already, even though he wouldn't say that publicly. I think he's still got the momentum to win the championship this weekend, despite the fact of what happened in Japan. I think if you have a look at the results this year, you know, he's been comfortable in the lead in the championship. He's been racking up the second places when he needed to. And as a result, I think on the 1.5s, he's got the form. I think he'll do the job.
Mm-hmm. I knew you would pick Briscoe there, so I just threw that question out for no reason, because anyone that knows you knows you're a big Briscoe fan. So I think he has a good chance, but my pick would definitely be Dixon. He's in the lead, and he just, when he's on, and I think he's going to be on to get a second one this year. Paul, who is your pick for the championship?
I'm going to have to go with the international superstar. I like Ryan Briscoe. I think the Briscoe this year, you know, especially since Indianapolis, has been clearly the class of the field on the mile and a half ovals. You know, and when I say that, I don't include Motegi on there just because it's a really horse of a different color there. But he dominated at Texas. You know, he obviously won at Kentucky and won at Chicago. And when you look at the Ganassi guys, they've been a step behind on the mile and a half all year. When it's come down to go time, neither of them have had the speed to really keep up and get their cars to the front. And one thing that I think is overlooked is that the Penske guys, because the way their drivers like their cars, their setups are much more compatible, and they're able to learn from each other a little more than the Target guys are, where Dixon likes to run his car a little loose of center, and Franchitti likes to run his a little pushing or a little understeer. And so they can't really share that information back and forth to get advanced their position and make a better setup. So from the team standpoint, I think the Penske guys have an advantage there. Now, if you look at their records, now that indicates something different. Briscoe's only run twice at Homestead, but he finished 19th last year, although he was running fairly well when he got taken out by Milka during the race. But you look at Dixon's performance, he's got two wins there. He's had top fives in each of the last 3 years. He's qualified well there. So from a performance standpoint, you have to think that Dixon holds an advantage at this point. And unfortunately, I just don't have the same hope for Dario. Even though he's run pretty well this year, all of his wins have, and I wrote this on the blog last night, if you look at all of his wins have come on courses where he started up front because he qualified well, but he doesn't have a win yet on a course that actually requires much passing. His wins at Iowa and Toronto and, help me out here, is an Infineon, I think. Mm. He started up front, he got to the lead early, and then nobody could pass him. He's not going to have that luxury at Homestead this weekend. And taking all those accounts into, you know, taking all those things into account, I think it's Briscoe's race to lose this weekend.
On the 1.5-mile ovals, though, this year, Paul, the average finish of the three were leading is Dixon. He has 2.8 as an average finish and two wins. Briscoe is second. His average is 5.2 and two wins. And Franchitti's average finish on the 1.5 is seventh, and he hasn't won this year on a 1.5. So I'm going to have to stick with my pick and say that this is definitely Scott's race to lose, and I don't think he will.
Well, another thing with Franchitti is that, you know, he's never really run that well on the mile and a half ovals. Toss out his win at Indy. His only two victories on super speedways came at California in 2006 and two years ago at Chicago in 2007 when he shouldn't have won that race. That one kind of fell into his lap when Dixon ran out of fuel. Now, I agree that Dixon seems like a good pick, but I just think that they've been behind the Penske's all year. So unless they are able to get to the front, you know, qualify well, start up front, and then hook themselves up to pull away from the field with long green flag runs, especially if the last 80 or 90 laps go green, I just don't see the Penske or the Ganassi guys having the speed to pull away and get past Briscoe.
Traditionally, the Ganassi cars have been very quick down there. Do you think that has a that gives them an advantage this weekend?
Well, Weldon won there for what, 4 years in a row now?
He won 2 years in a row. Was it?
I think he has.
He won 1 year with AGR in 05, and he won 06 and 07 with Ganassi.
He has three of the last four or five or whatever. And I think that might not be Ganassi, but Ganassi, if I had to pick a team without the driver, if all the drivers were equal, Ganassi would be the team to pick at this race.
They're good. I mean, there's no question about it, but they just have, you know, after we saw it at Texas, we saw it at Kentucky, we saw it at Chicago. Each one of those three, you know, while Victory Lane interviews were going on, Scott Dixon was somewhere else saying, you know, we just didn't have the speed to keep up with the Penske's. And I don't see that changing a whole lot for this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
They'll put themselves in a position. I think 20 laps to go, you'll see them both in the top six or seven, but I'd be surprised if they were gunning it out for the win at this point.
Can you guys see any other result for the race win other than the one of the three championship contenders?
Well, I'll preview my predictions a little bit for later, and I have for the win, I have Ed Carpenter.
Hmm.
I think he can do it. So
no,
I don't think the champion this year will not win the race. I think the champion, since it's so close, all the contenders are going to be running slow and in the back to keep it safe, and at least until like the last 20 laps. But I don't see any of the three winning the race.
Yeah, I take the opposite way there, Cole. I think that the race leaders are going to want to be up front. You know, given the situation with the winner take all here, I don't think the leaders can afford to just drive around at the back, you know, and depend on their car to take them to the front in the last 20, 25 laps. And B, Homestead has a way of eating cars. I mean, we've seen a lot of pretty good accidents down there. I think back to 2005 with the, you know, where Danica knocked herself out going through that accident. That track just has a way of eating cars, and I don't think that any of the front runners are going to want to be anywhere near mid-pack or farther back, reduce that risk. But to answer Shane's question, I think absolutely you could see somebody outside the top three win. I wouldn't be surprised to see Elio right up there. Certainly you're not going to see him win if Briscoe's running second. I mean, you can guarantee that. Dan Weldon, we touched on a little earlier, he knows this track as well as anyone, and he made a laugh route of it a couple of years ago when he almost lapped the field. And I still think TK is going to run well. AGR typically runs pretty well at Homestead, and he's going to be as hungry as anyone to find a win this year.
I think that the championship contenders are going to be up the front. I think the key decision-making point on that is the 2 points for the most laps led. With Briscoe minus eight, the Ganassi guys can lock Briscoe out of the title contention by securing those points. So for Dario, I think he's in the lead. So as a consequence, I think they'll run up front pretty hard, pretty early on, and try and lock Briscoe out with those 2 points. That's what happened at Chicago last year. The Penske guys ran up front to try and take those 2 points away, and I think expect to see the championship runners up front early.
Mm-hmm. Well, that comes into play because the only situation where it's not a winner-take-all is if Briscoe wins and Dixon finishes second and leads the most laps. Then you come in, you have Briscoe and Dixon tied for the championship, and in the end it goes to Dixon as a tiebreaker. So I agree. I think you're going to see Dixon really try to get out front and be the rabbit and lead as many laps as he can.
I think one of two things will happen. Either we see the terrible, god-awful Ganassi train at the front where they just lockstep for the whole 200 laps, or we see a lot of dicing between the people like Carpenter and Danica and Elio for the lead, and the rest of them sitting around maybe fourth or fifth-ish. I'm going to stick with my earlier thing. Maybe they're not going to be at the back, but I still think they're going to be just hanging out about fifth. Because if I'm them and there are people like Weldon and Carpenter and Danica that all want to win, I don't want to be up there when they're going three wide like they were at Chicago. And I know Homestead doesn't have a history of being close and three wide, but I think that's also because of it was being the first race. Why would you want to go three wide and wreck your stuff? Now that it's the last race for all the glory with all the question marks for next season, I think there's going to be a lot of dicing at the front. And if they're smart, and if it was me in their position, I would be hanging out in fourth or fifth.
Don't forget, too, we've got the new aero package for this race for the first time. And the consequence of that is the racing will be a lot closer. And I expect the racing will be a lot more NASCAR-like in the fact that they'll be going two by two. And while Homestead doesn't lend itself to three-wide racing, maybe three-wide.
I think you'll certainly see him running too wide around there. You know, with the variable banking that really shows itself well for running at least two wide. I agree. I don't think we're going to see the three wide, but I think we're going to see plenty of passing. And Cole, I completely agree with you that in the past, I don't think we've seen as much action at the track simply because as a season opening event, you're just trying to get laps under your belt, run a full race, not take yourself out, put yourself on the wall. So drivers tend to be very conservative in those opening races. I think this is going to really look a lot different this year than the Homestead we've seen in the last, you know, 5, 6, 8 years.
And I've never been a fan of the newer Homestead setup, but I think now that it has the chance to live up to the potential that it hasn't been getting as the first race, it'll be a lot better. The other thing that I'm thinking about as this weekend starts is the crowd. I'm worried about the crowd there because every American racing championship that matters besides LMS is finishing within the next month at Homestead. So I don't think you're going to have a lot of the carryover people that you would get at the early day, the NASCAR fans that would come just because it's a race. And I know a lot of the diehards will be there because it is the season finale, but I don't think the crowd is going to be as good as it has been in the past, and it's never been that good.
Yeah, I think it's a balance of two things. I think, you know, you've got the locals who may not come in the same numbers that they've come in previously, but I think the alternative point of view is now it's the championship race. You've probably got a lot more people from out of town, and out-of-town people fill hotel rooms and make chambers of commerce happy. And sometimes those things can help decide whether a race, you know, floats or sinks. So, you know, I know very much in the Australian racing culture with all the premium events, the Grand Prix here and the Gold Coast A1GP race as it now is, you know, they're very dependent on the number of people that come from out of town more than the actual people that come to the race. So,
So overall this year, what are your guys' thoughts on this year? Has it been a better year than last year? Has it gone down? What are your overall thoughts from the season so far?
You go first, Paul.
All right. No, I've been very pleased with the season thus far. A lot of people are going to look back and not look fondly on the fact that all but one of the races thus far has been won by Ganassi and Penske. But really, we've seen some very good racing this year, particularly on the ovals the second half of the season. It's a shame that, you know, things had to get kind of screwed up for Kansas and Texas and Richmond, and those didn't race as well as they have previously. But it's been a very entertaining season in terms of we've had three or four drivers who, you know, the red cars, so to speak, have been competitive amongst themselves all year. There certainly hasn't been a clear runaway title contender. Even last year, you had Dixon and Castroneves going to the final race with a chance, but realistically, Elio was 30 points out, and all Dixon had to do last year, I think, was finish something like eighth or some ridiculously low number like that. I think my biggest surprise this year has been the lack of success that Tony Kanaan has had. He started out well. He led the points going into Indy, but ever since he got halfway down the back straight on whatever lap that was, his year has really taken a dive. He obviously had a terribly hard hit there. He didn't have any more luck at Milwaukee. I think he had a fire there and another fire at Edmonton. If he didn't have bad luck, he wouldn't have any luck this year. So it's been disappointing to see Tony struggle this year as much as he has. But on the flip side of that, it's been really neat to watch him as a person this year, watch him struggle and yet always maintain such a great attitude toward the fans, toward his team. Not like some other drivers that we've seen before who haven't even had success, just struggle with their team and then throw the team under the bus. Tony has continued to work well with his team, continued to work well with his teammates, hasn't given up or pouted or complained. And I think that's been really refreshing to see, particularly in an era when so many athletes judge themselves solely by the number of victories they have. It's refreshing to see Tony present himself in such a way. So I've been proud of him this year. Those are the things I've taken away. I mean, I think it's been a great year. People complain that it's, you know, boring with just Penske and Ganassi, but I would think otherwise. Especially congrats also to Dale Coyne. It was really cool to see Dale Coyne's team finally break through with that victory. Their home base is only about 2 miles from my house here, so it's really neat to see the hometown team finally crack through and get that first win that everyone's been waiting for.
Maybe now Dale can get a different shirt besides the one he's been wearing for 30 years now.
Probably not.
Yeah, the traditional red and white striped shirt that he never changes out of.
Yeah, I think that's his only shirt he has.
And Shane, what do you think of the season so far?
I think you got to look at all motor racing series in light of the biggest issue for this year, and the biggest issue this year was the economy. I think in a series where lots of series have had to downsize or change their formula significantly to make it work, this series hasn't changed the formula that much, and they've been able to manage the issues with the economy. As well as that, they've been able to still have great racing and still have a title battle that's down to the last race. We've had significant number of lead changes in the championship. I think we're up to, was it 14 out of 16 or something similar?
In that ballpark, yeah.
Yeah, which is just amazing. The and you know, some great racing and kept the stories in the news. I mean, I think the things that I can remember from this year the most, I mean, was the first was the words "not guilty," and the surprise there, and I mean that was a story in itself. When, you know, I don't think anybody expected Elio to jump in the car at Long Beach and actually drive the thing after getting a not guilty verdict less than 24 hours before the practice session. The other things I sort of remember from this year, I mean, you know, the oval package they had some issues with, but they overcame it. I think when you look at careers and defining years, I think Danica Patrick's had a defining year in her career. I mean, you look at the points table at the moment, and she looks likely to be the lead driver in her team, which no one would have thought 3 years ago. The other one I think that we'll look back on this year as a changing year in their career is Graham Rahal. A significant development in his ability and maturity as a race car driver. He's made a few mistakes this year. I mean, I can remember a few instances that there was that save at Indianapolis during the practice session where I think it was Mukoduno's car, but that might be testing my memory. That was significant, and just his poise in the pit lane. You know, there was a significant change from last year, and you can see it now starting to reflect with the help of a good teammate to help develop that car in the last couple of races in the results. And I think he'll look back on this year as a significant year as well.
And another driver that you mentioned as a significant year looking back is Mario Moraes. He's really impressed me this year. Last year, you know, I was saying maybe he doesn't deserve to be here, maybe he's not at a talent level high enough to be in the IndyCar series, but he's really impressed me this year with how much he's improved and just his how much more mature he is as a driver this year. But the thing that really strikes out most to me this year is the championship. People in NASCAR and NHRA always complain because the championships are too far apart, so what do? They make a chase to make it closer, and they're still far apart, and it's usually still decided before the last race. I just want to point out that after, 17 races now?
16.
16 races now, the points of the top three are separated by 8 points. You cannot complain about the championship. As much as people hate to see domination by the top four cars, that is something special when you can go that long and only be separated by 8 points with all that happens in a season. So that's what's really surprised me the most is how close it is and how close it's been in the past. And I think as we look back on the season in the future, that's one of the things that'll stick out, especially if it gets even better after this weekend and it's close when we finish up. So are there any other things you want to cover from this season?
I would just echo what both of you said. You know, to watch Graham and Mario get to the point this year where they have gotten compared to where they start has just been remarkable to see. I can remember back in, you know, February or January when KV Racing announced that they were hiring Mario, how many people laughed and said, you know, what a ride buyer he was. And
I was one.
Yeah, I was one too. So, you know, he's really shut them up, and he's had just the last 5-6 races have been incredible to see him. Likewise with Graham. I really hope, as much as I want Pink Floyd to get a ride next year, that team is so good with Oriel Servia on it. Those two, there was obviously a disconnect between Graham and Robert Dornbos from the time they walked in together, but you can see the chemistry between Oriel and Graham. And, you know, if that continues through next year, I'd be shocked if one or both of them didn't win a race next year.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that in the NHL and the drivers that you think should not have moved or should be here or things like that. Something else that's going to stand out is over this year and last year, both, something has really struck me, and that is that it's been kind of a changing of the guard over the last 1 or 2 years. If you look back at 2007 and look at the driver lineup and then look at it now and see how many people are in the same ride or have a ride at all, it's astounding how many new faces we have and where those faces are now. So, and I don't think that's a good thing, in my opinion. I think the series needs stability, and you need that relevance. When people look at the 5 car, they know that's Mario Moraes. And I think that's one thing NASCAR has really capitalized on. People know who drives the 24 car. How many people know what Will Power's number is or what his car looks like? We need stability, and I think that's another thing that really stands out this season as what we need to work on or what things I look back at.
True, but if you look at the big three, you look at Ganassi, Penske, and Andretti Green, you've got 7 of those 8 drivers in the same car and number this year that you had last year, the only exception being Dario. People know who Dario is. You know, a lot of that turnover has come as a result of the unification from last year. You know, you look at Newman Haas coming in, KV Racing coming in, HVM, Conquest, you know, the teams that came in from Champ Car very late and didn't have the established budgets at the time. They're the ones who had to have taken a little bit more of the money from the drivers, and not by because they want to, but because that's what they've had to do to simply survive the last couple of years. All in all, though, you look at the last handful of years, though, the driver stability since 2006-ish has been infinitely better than it was from, you know, say 2000 up until 2006, where, you know, you needed a program every time you showed up at a race. Now we finally got that stability where you have the pretty much the same guys at Penske, the same guys at Ganassi, most of the same people at AGR. You know, Dan Weldon's still around. He's in a new car, but he's still there. Vitor's still there. You know, for the most part, most of the guys are still there. And you're seeing that turnover in NASCAR as well. I mean, you still have the Jeff Gordons and the Jimmy Johnsons who are in their same cars. But, you know, Dale Jr. moved a couple of years ago. Mark Martin moved. You know, there's a lot of guys moving around in NASCAR as well.
And the thing I look at, though, is I have watched one NASCAR race, and that was partial the entire year. And I can tell you who drives every car. I have been watching every IndyCar practice session all year, and every time I see the 5 car, I still think, hey, look, it's Oriel Servia. Keep the people in the rides they're at, and keep the same paint scheme, keep the number. We need stability, and we need to know that the same person is the same place year after year.
I think it's hard because it's out of control of a series organizer. I don't think there's as much issue with the stability as sort of what is perceived. It's one of those things where I think that gets better if you, as a series, you put the right incentives in place. I think in terms of what the IndyCar series have now, they're probably correct. I mean, it's been a hard couple of years because of the split and what the Indy Racing League have had to do to accommodate the transition teams, and I think it's still valid to call them that at this point. The test for this series will be how they handle this off-season transition. It's a tough off-season transition for the economy, even though things are just starting to pick up at this end. But just the same, a lot of the incentives, like the free cars that the transition teams got, disappear at this point. So the challenge will be, as it has been every year for this series, it will be how many cars are on the grid at the first event. The key advantage this series has now that it had 2 years ago, 3 years ago, is the depth. I mean, now it used to be 1, 2, 3, 4, and then a pretty big step to 5, 6, 10, and then another big step from 10 to 20. I think now you get a step still from 4th to 5th, but then if you look at the results from 5th through to about 15th or 16th, they're all pretty even.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. It seems it's leveling out, but it's still something that needs to be looked at, worked on a lot. So I think that just about covers the championship and the championship weekend. So we'll move on as we covered this a little bit earlier, but as always, it's a pre-race podcast here. So your predictions for the race, gentlemen. We'll start with Shane. Your top 3 and your dark horse driver to watch.
Top 3, Briscoe needs to win this to win the championship, and he will do so. Dixon in 2nd, and in 3rd, we might have a bit of a surprise. We might have Graham Rahal in 3rd for Newman Haas. Dark horse, I think you have to watch Mr. Lloyd, actually. I think, you know, if that car's set up right, he might have a potential for a top 5.
Mm-hmm. And Paul?
Well, I'm going to go with Briscoe to take the win as well. And helping him get there, I'm going to put Elio in 2nd, who is going to do a very nice job of doing the best wingman job that he can.
Now, I'm going to interrupt you, Paul, and ask the critical question here. Is Castro Neves going to be in the lead on lap 199?
No. No. He's smarter than that. He won't do a Michael Schumacher. He'll
be on the gearbox all night.
Yeah, he will make sure that his left front tire is as close as it can get to Briscoe's right rear without coming close to touching it. So if that means he has to make those two cars have to take up 3.5 lanes, that's what's going to happen. But Roger's not going to put his drivers in a position where he has to have Elio pull over. No.
I hate to use a NASCAR cliche here, but Elio's car will be 3 wide by itself all night. No one's going to get past him.
Pretty much.
If he's in second, that car is 6 feet wide, but Saturday night, that car is going to be 18 feet wide.
What'll be interesting is to see how long his leash is going to be from Brian Barnhart, because Barnhart's going to know his game. You know, come lap 195, when his car becomes 3.5 lanes wide by itself, how much leeway does Barnhart give him before he says, keep it straight or you know, park it?
Mm-hmm.
So I got Briscoe taking the win. I got Elio to place and to show. I like Graham as well. I think he's shown very well in the ovals, particularly the last couple ovals. And my guy to watch this weekend, I'm going with Dan Weldon. I know he and Panther have struggled. It's a good chance this could be their last race together, but Dan knows Homestead as well or better than anyone. He's had three wins here. One of them was a total laugher. So he knows how to get around the track. I think he'll do well again this weekend.
We really should have got Thomas Schechter on the show this week, because between you two and Thomas Schechter, the only words we would hear are Briscoe and Mona V. I can't have you two together. You guys agree on too much. That's no fun. So my picks, Carpenter to win, Dixon second, Frank Heedy third, and my driver to watch is Danica. I think that'll just about wrap it up. If there's nothing else you gentlemen want to cover, I want to thank Paul for giving up his time, and especially thank Shane for waking up at, what is it, Shane, 7 o'clock there?
It's 1 minute to 8, yeah.
Waking up before 7 a.m. to come and join us here on the show. And, of course, thank you for listening and supporting the site. We have some very exciting things coming on the site this week, so stay tuned to that. As always, this is Cole saying goodbye from the PlanetIRL.com podcast.